NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Republican senators want to meet with President Biden to discuss a coronavirus relief bill. Republicans, including Susan Collins of Maine and Mitt Romney of Utah, claim their proposal contains more targeted assistance than what the Biden administration is pushing. Biden wants Congress to pass a nearly $2 trillion bill, but that measure has little room for error in both chambers. Democrats narrowly control the House, while Vice President Kamala Harris can cast a tie-breaking vote for the Democrats in the evenly divided Senate. Millions of Americans are waking up this morning to witness a major winter storm in action. The National Weather Service reports heavy snowfall in the Great Lakes region. Before all is said and done, the storm is expected to bring hazardous travel conditions and lots of snow to around 100 million people from Minnesota to Maine. Snow accumulations are predicted to go up to nearly a foot in several areas, including large cities such as Chicago, where the storm began late yesterday, and in Philadelphia and New York City. Lisa Taylor, NBC News Radio.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Police in Moscow have detained large numbers of protesters who are trying to get to the prison where the Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny is being held. Among the detained was his wife, Yulia. Monitors say more than 2,000 have been picked up in demonstrations across Russia. Social media posts suggest police used stun guns. Sarah Rainsford is among the protesters.
Really huge crowds heading towards the prison where they were met by vast numbers of riot police. I saw them taking up positions across the road, trying to block people getting to the prison. And then we've just seen dozens of people being detained outside the prison itself. People who've been chanting for Alexei Navalny to be released, chanting against Vladimir Putin. The police swooped and they've been dragging people away and taking them away in police vehicles. So I think the number of detainees today is going to grow more and more. But clearly people have not been deterred by the risk, and they have taken to the streets, not just here in Moscow, but in other cities as well.
The fugitive leader of Ethiopia's embattled Tigray region has made his first public comments in more than 2 months. Here's Will Ross.
In the audio recording posted on social media, the fugitive TPLF leader alleged widespread incidents of murder, rape, torture and intentional starvation during the war in the Tigray region. Debretsion Gebremichael called on Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and the Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki to be tried at the International Criminal Court for...
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. Two lawyers who were said to be on former President Donald Trump's impeachment defense team will no longer be representing him. And NPR's Tamara Keith reports it's not really clear who is representing the former president as the trial draws near.
Trump's legal team has a pre-trial filing due this week. But at this point, it's entirely unclear who is writing it. Two South Carolina-based attorneys who were on the team, Butch Bowers and Deborah Barbier, are no longer representing the president. A source familiar says the decision was mutual, though no explanation was offered. An aide working with Trump in his post presidency, Jason Miller, had tweeted glowingly about Bowers joining the team just 10 days ago. Then Saturday night, he noted the majority of Republican senators voted last week to say impeaching the president after he's left office is unconstitutional, adding Trump and his advisors have, quote, not made a final decision on our legal team, which will be made shortly. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
South Carolina Republican Congressman Tim Rice is accusing the state party of cowering before Donald Trump. He told the Post and Courier newspaper that he stands by his vote to impeach the former president after the state party censured him this weekend. South Carolina has identified the first known case of the UK variant of the coronavirus in the state. This comes after South Carolina detected its first case of another variant, also believed to be more easily and quickly spread. South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen reports.
State health officials say the UK variant was found in a coastal community of South Carolina, and the person infected does have a history of international travel. They add that since the discovery Friday, more than 400 cases of the UK variant have been reported nationwide. South Carolina is also where the first patients with a coronavirus variant from South Africa were announced last week. Their cases are said not to be related, and neither has traveled recently. For NPR News, I'm Victoria Hansen in South Carolina.
A group of 10 Republican senators say they've come up with compromise coronavirus relief legislation that they say can get through Congress with bipartisan support. They're requesting a meeting with President Biden, even as Democrats seem ready to act on Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan without GOP support. A big storm spreading over the East Coast after dumping heavy snow this weekend in northern Illinois and Indiana. Some areas could see as much as 14 inches. The storm is expected to move north into New York by tonight on Long Island. Nassau County Executive Laura Curran.
We're asking you to stay off the roads as much as possible for our crews and for the other crews, but also for your own safety.
A storm is moving in from the west, and forecasters expect it to transition to a nor'easter. You're listening to NPR News. Protesters are on the streets of cities across Russia for a second weekend of demonstrations, calling for the release of the jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny. An activist group puts a number of those arrested at more than 3,000, including Navalny's wife, Yulia. She was also detained during last weekend's protests. The Biden administration has urged Russia to release Navalny and has criticized the crackdown on protesters. In December, the South African government reimposed a ban on alcohol sales and ordered the closure of all bars to counter a resurgence of the coronavirus, including a new variant. The ban has hit the wine industry particularly hard. New cases and deaths have since gone down, and winemakers in the Western Cape, the hub of the country's wine industry, asking the government to ease the ban, as Ishma Fundikwa reports from Harare.
Larger wineries export a significant amount of their wine, but Marina Kalo, the spokesperson of Wines of South Africa, a wine industry organization, says smaller producers may not weather the ban.
About 70% of all South African wineries are small enterprises. These businesses are so heavily reliant on the cellar door sales and the wine tourism element. It is them that are bleeding.
She added that besides the threat to tens of thousands of jobs in the wine industry, others in the tourism and hospitality sectors may also lose their livelihoods. For NPR News, I am Ish Mafundikwa in Harare.
And I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Kate, from a producer's point of view, what opportunities, what challenges?
It becomes different. And at least one.
Did the Chinese
virus didn't originate in China? Maybe it came from another country and arrived there to have a look.
Following the team in Wuhan, it would appear to be relatively safe in terms of avoiding a conviction.
One safe play that, as you mentioned, that 45 members did vote for is to just take the emphasis off the big issue of whether or not there was election fraud, whether he was telling the truth during this speech in which...
Right, so what we've got to...
...called the big lie.
Listening to NewsHour from the BBC social distance where the kind of restrictions on our life that the pandemic has caused are no longer there. Do you think people will actually want to go back to more traditional theatres, though? Do you think actually that this might have a place, but it will be alongside the more traditional theatres?
Whilst this can accommodate a healthy number of audience members in a theatre.
Rick and Katie Lipson there on their vertical theatre. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. Now, a number of lawyers who are expected to defend President Trump at his impeachment trial in the US Senate have resigned. Let's find out what's going on. Corey Bretschneider is Professor of Political Science at Brown University and the author of The Oath and the Office. Welcome to the program, Corey. Who are these lawyers and what do we know about what's happened to them or what decision they've taken?
There are a number of respected lawyers from South Carolina. We have a former George W. Bush Justice Department official, someone who was a federal prosecutor, and at least one of them was recommended by Lindsey Graham, but there's been differences when it comes to how to actually defend the president. The president, the reporting says, wants these lawyers to go out and say that he was right to say that there was fraud in this election. And these are respected lawyers. They're not going to go out and and say something like this that is completely false. It's often been called the big lie. They wouldn't say it in court. This isn't a court of law. It's the Senate trial that we're talking about, an impeachment proceeding. But they don't want to get up in front of the American people. They don't want to get up in front of this really sacred institution of impeachment and tell a lie. And
well, you mentioned Lindsey Graham, Senator, Republican Senator from South Carolina. Technically, he's one of the jurors, isn't he, in this? So and he's recommending one of the defense lawyers.
Yes, I think that hasn't gotten as much attention, but it is certainly a conflict of interest. Another conflict of interest is that a lot of people thought Rudy Giuliani would be involved, but of course he gave one of the speeches. The president is charged with inciting not just violence, but an insurrection, violence on the day of the counting of the electoral votes, so that's excluded him. But even if these lawyers were in, they're just not willing to do what this president wants.
Right, so what, we've got a week or so until the trial itself starts. Do we have any sense of who else might be in the fray? Anyone who's stepping forward?
One wild speculation is that the president is telling advisors he might defend himself. And that would, of course, just add to the television reality show spectacle of all of this. And, of course, he would be willing to desecrate the Senate by telling the big lie. I don't think it'll come to that. I don't know. He's running out of options because, you know, I think it's also that the attorneys who defended him in this line about the election results, saying that there was fraud, are so discredited that it's ruled them out. Yeah. So I think he's just got to look for other options.
Well, at the same time, Corey, 45 Republican senators, I think, voted against the impeachment trial going ahead. So he would appear to be relatively safe in terms of avoiding a conviction.
One safe play that, as you mentioned, that 45 members did vote for is to just take the emphasis off the big issue of whether or not there was election fraud, whether he was telling the truth during this speech in which he incited violence, violent insurrection, and pivot instead to the question of whether the process is constitutional. And what those senators are saying, led by Rand Paul, is that you can't impeach a former president. And that, I think, is contradicted by the fact that you can disqualify a person from running for future office.
Corey, thank you very much indeed. Corey Brettschneider there. You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is NewsHour, coming to you live from London with James Kamarasamy. A team of World Health Organization investigators has visited the Chinese market where the first coronavirus cases were detected. The experts finally got to see what was Wuhan's main centre for the sale of live animals before it was shut down. Our correspondent Stephen McDonnell has been following the team in Wuhan.
It was very symbolic when the WHO investigation team turned up at the Huanan market. Now, people will remember this is the market. I mean, it's officially called the Huanan Seafood Market, but really it had all manner of exotic animals for sale before it was closed. 70% of the early coronavirus cases were all linked to that market, according to documents cited by the WHO. And yet it's possible it's not where the virus started, because they think now, Chinese scientists, they've found other cases which sort of track back before the clusters which appeared at that market. But in the beginning, it looked like that's where it had come from, because, you know, there were, you know, rats and pangolins and all manner of animals, which is where the scientists think they could have been the intermediary carrier after the coronavirus jumped from bats into something like pangolins and then into human beings. I mean, it could be that market was just a sort of super spreader location and it just happened to be so crowded that that's why so many people were infected there. Even though it's empty now, the WHO team has still gone there to have a look. It must, in a way, inform their research. They can have a bit of a look at the place. But without being allowed in to see what they're doing, it's really hard for us to gauge.
Yeah, what sort of impression have you got about what the rest of the itinerary includes?
They today also went to another market. Their first stop was like a sort of massive wholesale food facility where they were studying the frozen food supply chains in Wuhan. Now, that sounds pretty boring, except it's also very crucial in terms of the political fight over the coronavirus, because it's thought, according to some, that the virus can survive for longer than we initially believed on the surface of frozen foods. Now, the Chinese government likes this possibility because, naturally, it means the potential that you could say, oh, maybe the coronavirus didn't originate in China. Maybe it came from another country and arrived on frozen seafood. So this is why they'd be happy that the WHO team went to this location. And it is funny, in the certain spots they're going to, you can kind of tell the ones the Chinese government like them visiting. I mean, for example, yesterday they went to this exhibition to the heroes of the coronavirus. Now, they were in there for hours. It must have been 3 hours inside this exhibition. I'm not sure how that really helps their research, but it makes their hosts happy. I guess the team might say, well, why not do it?
I suppose the big question is, are they able to visit places that the Chinese government would not be happy with for them to visit?
Well, this is when it gets very interesting, because they came out at one point today out of the Huanan market, popped their heads out to where we were, so the gathered media across the road, and I started throwing questions at them. They were a long way off, so it's hard to hear what they were saying. But when I said, oh, are you happy with the visit today? One of them gave a thumbs up. Are you happy with the access you're getting? Thumbs down. So it seems that their satisfaction, and also less than satisfaction from the team in terms of where they can and can't go.
Steve McDonald there in Wuhan. Last November, a civil war broke out in Ethiopia. Federal forces under the government in Addis Ababa attacked the northern province of Tigray, which was under the control of the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, or TPLF. Since the government claimed victory at the end of November, the TPLF's leader hasn't been seen. But on Saturday, Debretsion Gebremichael broadcast a message on Facebook calling on Tigrayans to intensify the struggle and suggesting that Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and Eritrea's leader Isaias Afwerki should be brought before the International Criminal Court.
This is DW News live from Berlin. Another day of high drama in Russia as activists defy police warnings to stay away from protest rallies. Hundreds are arrested supporting the jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny at demonstrations in dozens of cities nationwide. Navalny's wife Yulia is among those detained in Moscow. Also on the show, hope for Hong Kong citizens unwilling to live under Chinese rule. The UK opens a new visa scheme offering millions the chance to gain British citizenship. London says it has a moral duty to the people of Hong Kong. And in the Bundesliga, Bayern get their revenge against a side which thrashed them earlier in the season. We'll have all the goals as the Bavarians send Hoffenheim packing. I'm Pablo Folielias. Welcome to the programme. We begin in Russia, where thousands of government opponents have defied police warnings not to join protest rallies. They've turned out in cities nationwide in support of Navalny. Authorities have mounted a massive operation in an attempt to contain the demonstrations. Campaigners say hundreds of activists have been arrested. Protest actions have been taking place from Siberia in the east to Moscow and St. Petersburg in the west. Navalny was arrested on his return to Russia from Germany, where he spent 5 months recovering from an attempt to kill him with a nerve agent. Supporters say his wife Yulia is among those detained at a gathering in Moscow. Well, for the latest from the Russian capital, we're joined by DW correspondent Emily Sherwin. Hi, Emily. Well, you've been following the protests all day. What is the situation right now?
Well, Pablo, Alexei Navalny's team have said that this is the final point of today's protests. This is Komsomolskaya Square, right in the center of Moscow. You might be able to see there's a huge police presence. After that announcement, they came here basically ready to start arresting protesters again. That's what we've been seeing all day. Essentially, what we've been seeing is kind of a cat and mouse game between the protesters and the police. The police had initially closed off a huge chunk of the center of the city, including the spots where protesters wanted to meet. So protesters had to then go somewhere else. And essentially, we've been seeing Alexei Navalny's team in Moscow coordinating protests via Telegram, which is a messaging service, and people kind of following their calls and going to different places around the city. On our way here, we saw just the scale, really, of the protests, because people were following that call to come to this final point. And really, there did seem to be really hundreds and hundreds of people who were marching through the city and chanting together.
So hundreds of people, but why are so many people coming out despite the threat of arrest?
Well, we've been hearing today lots of different chants, many of them traditional, I think, for the Russian opposition, including Putin is a thief. They've been calling to people, other people, to come out to join them in the streets. People said to me that, you know, this is not so much about Navalny at all, or this is, he's only part of the reason why they took to the streets. People have been, of course, following the fact that he was arrested, tried, as many say, kind of unjustly right in the police station. That has angered people. But many people here say that it's really about improving their lives here. They're sick of the corruption in Russia, and they want economic conditions to be better, and they're sick of the same people being in power for so long.
Well, we're seeing images there of some of the arrests taking place, Emily. Now, it's the second week of protest. Are we seeing less or more people taking to the street?
It's kind of hard to say because people have been kind of moving around the city today in Moscow. I think that the scale is slightly smaller than it was last week. But just like last week, protests have been taking place across the country, in cities across the country. And that's unusual. You know, usually in Russia, people kind of protest mainly in Moscow and St. Petersburg. But these protests in support of Navalny have been much, much more widespread. We'll have to wait and see whether they keep it up. Or not.
Emily Sherwin in Moscow, thanks for that update. Germany and Austria are offering to help Portugal deal with one of the world's worst COVID-19 outbreaks. Portugal has the highest number of deaths per inhabitant of any country. Germany's military is sending medical aid and doctors. Austria is preparing to take in some of Portugal's critically ill patients. Portuguese doctors say the situation is becoming desperate.
Tight checks at Portugal's borders. At this entry point into Spain, only those with a valid reason are allowed through. Portugal had seen a period of relatively relaxed restrictions. Now people are confined to their homes, except for essential outings. Nurseries, schools, shops and cafes are shut. The government has entered crisis mode. I think it could be even stricter. There are still too many people on the streets. Many Portuguese still haven't understood that we've gone from being a good corona country to one of the worst. Portugal's intensive care units are straining. Some hospitals are running out of beds for COVID-19 patients. Others are short of medical staff or oxygen supplies. Long lines of ambulances have formed outside some clinics. Many patients have to wait hours until doctors decide whether they can be admitted and where. We have never before triaged like we're doing now. Sometimes we're having to treat people in the ambulances. Authorities say the highly infectious virus variant, first found in Britain, has caused half of all cases in Greater Lisbon. Some patients have been airlifted from overstretched mainland hospitals to the Madeira Islands, more than 1,000 kilometres away.
Well, Germany is sending its military, the Bundeswehr, to help Portugal. And DW reporter Joel Dulroy is following the story for us. Hi, Joel. Now, what type of assistance are the Bundeswehr, the German military, going to provide?
So I've been talking to a spokesman from the Bundeswehr. He's been telling me that an exploratory team has been on the ground in Portugal over the past few days assessing the situation, which, of course, is dire. And now the military has to decide how and when and what kind of support it will give. That decision will be coming imminently, but the message is it will go as soon as possible. What's likely to be sent? Well, military medical personnel, for starters, as well as equipment such as ventilators, IV drips, medication, and protective gear. Now, the real question is how much can Germany spare? Already there are around 17,000 personnel on the ground here in Germany helping the pandemic response, and they'll have to see how many they can actually send to Portugal. Now, the spokesman for the Bundeswehr said that any personnel who are sent will first have to be vaccinated against COVID-19, and several thousand have already received the first shot. Mm. It's not the first time that the Bundeswehr has been called in to help other countries. It went into the Czech Republic, and it also helped airlift patients out of northern Italy. Also to mention, Austria is going to airlift and treat seriously ill patients from Portugal.
All right, so Portugal is just one of Europe's pandemic struggles. Now, another is, of course, you mentioned the vaccine there, the production of the vaccine. Now, senior German politicians are proposing that the government should use emergency powers to boost the supply. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the vaccine market is fundamentally broken and the state must intervene. Now, those are the words of Markus Söder. He is the state premier from the state of Bavaria. He was speaking in Die Welt newspaper, and he says that much trust has been lost between the government and pharmaceutical companies over broken supply contracts. And he has proposed now a state-led emergency vaccine economy to boost production. He's also spoken in favor of the use of the Russian and Chinese vaccines here if they are proven safe and effective. Now, Markus Söder is not a federal politician, but he is very influential because he's in the governing coalition CDU-CSU parties. And he's also spoken of as a future chancellor candidate. His words on this regard have also received support from a leader of the Green Party, showing that there is cross-party consensus. We've seen that in the United States, the President Joe Biden has used the Defense Production Act to boost supply of vaccines there. And so now the question is, will the German government follow suit?
Mm. Well, Joel Dulroy, I'm sure you'll be keeping us all up to date on that. Thanks for your reporting there. Now to some other stories making headlines around the world. A World Health Organization team investigating the origins of COVID-19 has visited a market in Wuhan, China, where the coronavirus was first detected. The seafood market has been shut for a year, and the visit took place under tight security. Eight Afghan security personnel have been killed in an attack claimed by the Taliban militant group. A suicide bomber drove a vehicle loaded with explosives into an army base. The US claims the Taliban are not sticking to commitments agreed under a peace deal. Now, millions of Hong Kong residents have the chance now to become British citizens after the UK introduced a special visa scheme. Britain says it's fulfilling a moral and historic commitment to its former colony after China imposed a sweeping security law there and launched a massive crackdown on dissent. The scheme only applies to people born in Hong Kong before its handover from Britain to China in 1997. Beijing has called the visa offer a gross violation of its sovereignty. Let's bring in DW correspondent Phoebe Kong, who's in Hong Kong. Hi, Phoebe. Now, how are people in Hong Kong reacting to the UK visa scheme? Are many people there likely to take advantage of it?
Well, many Hong Kong residents on the ground, they welcome the rather generous offer by the UK government as a so-called lifeboat scheme for them to leave the territory, as the political climate on the ground is worsening day by day for many of the people here. And approximately there will be over 5 million Hong Kong residents are eligible for applying for the emigration scheme through the BNO passport scheme of the UK government. That accounts for over 70% of the population are eligible for this scheme. And although not everyone will take action. The UK administration has estimated that in the next 5 years, there will be at least 250,000 people to do so.
And what about China's reaction, Phoebe? The foreign ministry says it'll no longer recognize the British national overseas passport as a travel document. Can we expect some retaliatory measures against the UK?
Yes, you're right. So far, Beijing has announced that they will stop recognizing the BNO passport starting from today. So this is the first day of the scheme kicks off. And starting from today, the Hong Kong and also Beijing authority will no longer allow any Hong Kong residents to leave the border with their BNO passport, although they are still allowed to do so with their own Hong Kong travel documents. So many see this as a political and diplomatic gesture to retaliate Britain's offer to Hong Kong residents. But there are also rumors on the ground that many pro-Beijing politicians are now they're now suggesting the Beijing authorities to further consider to revoke the civil rights of Hong Kong residents who take the offer, especially maybe to cancel their electoral rights, to ban them from voting or run in office, or even their right of a vote to a more extreme extent. So many fear that this will only be the first step for Beijing to push back the UK's offer. And Beijing is trying to do so to send a message to the Hong Kong residents who would take the offer from the UK that they may face consequences or even more serious consequences by doing so.
Phoebe Kong in Hong Kong, thanks. To sports now, and in the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich hosted their jinx opponents Hoffenheim. The visitors beat the reigning champions 4-1 earlier in the season. This time, it was the other way around.
Bayern Munich with a case of the pre-game giggles. Little did they know they'd have plenty more to smile about at the end of the match. Even though they needed a corner to finally break down Hoffenheim's defense, not to mention the jumping skills of Jerome Boateng, his header found the back of the net to hand Bayern the lead in the 30th minute. A taste of what was to come. Thomas Müller doubled Bayern's lead 10 minutes later for his 10th goal of the season. But not without the help of Robert Lewandowski's nifty footwork. Bayern had barely finished celebrating when Hoffenheim pulled one back just before halftime, thanks to Andre Kramaric for his 13th goal of the season. But that's as close as Hoffenheim would get. Lewandowski made it 3-1 after just 57 minutes. Kingsley Coman with some slick play, and the Poland international finding himself in the right place at the right time. The floodgates had opened. Serge Gnabry added another to seal a 4-1 victory for Bayern, a scoreline that might sound familiar as Bayern avenged their 4-1 loss against Hoffenheim earlier in the season.